Mr. Ver, reel 14. Where did you go after your rest was completed?
Well, we went back in the line, but just more or less immediately, I went to Rome, on leave to Rome. Can't remember the exact dates. 9 days leave. We actually had more than 9 days because the vehicles bringing the next party down, which should have transported us back, broke down something, and they were late coming down for us, so we had an extra 3 or 4 days leave, all the way up to come out of the leave hotel into a transit camp, and with no pass, so we more or less likely to get picked up by the military police and we were caught out in Rome, which we did, going to Rome, I should say. So I was in Rome, don't know what date, but I went back when we went back from leave.
What are your memories of Rome at that time?
Well, I was wanting to go for a trip, a tour around Rome, but there was booked up actually. And the only one I could get on was into the Ardeatine caves. They were caves that during the occupation, some troops had been marching through Rome, and somebody threw a grenade or a couple of grenades, I don't know how many. But I think there were 36 Germans were killed. And so the Germans then took hostages, 10 for each one, and shot them, and took them out to these caves. Took them in there, shot them, and then blew the entrance of the cave. And this had been excavated since, and we went to view it, and there's quite a lot of bodies still inside, skeletons there. And there were cottages with skulls in them, probably identified them. There were certain others with photographs where they hadn't been identified. That was all I saw of any, if you call it, interest, macabre interest. We did go, got pally with some Americans, a couple of us. After we sort of, our leave was up, we had to move into this camp. So with no passes went out, but we used to go into Rome. We got into Rome and we got pally with some black Americans from the trucking company, drivers, and they were on leave from down in Naples somewhere. And they were more or less skint, so we took them with us into the club there in Rome called the Alexander Club. It was a big building. And it was a sort of a hollow centre. You used to have an orchestra band in the bottom playing all the latest jazz sort of thing. And then you'd put about 2 or 3 floors which sort of surrounded it. And we were in there with these Americans and sat and you could see down. And the orchestra were playing requests back to chatting them with the tutors and all that sort of thing at the time. Anyway, we saw saw this raid from the old red caps charged in, going down, looking at everybody's passes. Oh, this is it, we've had it. Marching folk out. Anyway, these Americans, one of them must have been about 6 foot 7, something like that. Well, we'll take them out and tell them, no, they're not. I said, all right, well, all we can do is take us away. I mean, we're not deserters. I mean, the fact is, like, they'd sort it out, but you'd lock your right out. Because I did see trucks outside with cages over, you know, and shoving them all in there. And that'd have been it, like, you'd have lost it. Anyway, I said, no, don't know. Anyway, they came round and were coming to the table. And as it happened, we were in shirt sleeves, and we had them American shirts. We were issued with American shirts, with like a flap across here. And It came to the next table to us. And then, because these were black, you see, obviously they were black Americans, they missed us. Missed our table, went to the next one. And these guys said, oh, I got that, you know. I said, well, if they'd have arrested us, we'd only have to go into a cage for the night, and they'd have sorted it out following the morning. But anyway, we got away with it, mate. But then we saw them, but we were coming back. They passed us on the road, these Americans. They didn't see us, but we were on a truck going back up. They were going the other way. They had a big wagon each, sort of, one of the GMCs, 8-wheelers. That were their leave truck. And they were going back down to Naples somewhere. And then, because we were back up the front. While I'd been away, there'd been the battle for the Cesena. So when I went back, I went back to a place called Montefiore, little village, Montefiore. And I was there when they came out of the line, and that was a time when I when I realised what we actually looked like, because it was the only time I'd ever not been in with them myself, and they were coming out, and I was sort of waited that they got saw them coming out, waited for our company, and the faces sort of looked ashen and drawn, and you know, I thought, well, that must be what we all looked like when after you've been in action. The shock and that sort of thing, which you don't realise when you're in yourself, because you see it gradually, I suppose. But it shocked me, did that. And anyway, we came out to this little place, and I was promoted to sergeant then. And we had we just dropped in for the sergeant's mess, they had a bit of a deal there. And that's where I was. Coming down with whiskey, sergeants used to have a ration of whiskey. I think it was a bottle a month or something like that. Well, of course, he didn't get it when he was in the line. But when he came out, we'd have a party, and he used to have it by the glass for the lemon, and this was by initiation sort of thing to the sergeant's mess. And I finished up down a slope where the trees were, and it had been raining, and I couldn't climb up again. But anyway, that was at Montefiore. I think that must have been the, it was October. Must have been late October then. Because I know Captain Reynolds, and he was like the PRI officer. He used to organise all the anything that was going to, I think, Tom Reynolds. And I think at that time I remember the organising Christmas cards while we were there at Montefiore. There was a cemetery there as well, a little cemetery with quite a few from the First World War buried there. But I don't know, they must have died of wounds or something from being brought down from the north, didn't they? I was going to be buried there because I don't think there was any fighting. It was up at Caporetto now, wasn't it? But I don't think there was anything down there. But anyway, there were several graves there. Must have died or something.
Where did you move to when you came off out of that rest?
After that rest, now then, we went back in again. It was fairly level ground then, in the vineyards. We were then in positions about 700 yards from the enemy, where the enemy was. We were in a house forward. The company headquarters in the house farther behind us. And there was some farmhouses ahead with one part on fire, with burning. And that's where the Germans were supposed to be. Anyway, there were a couple of patrols went out. Corporal Petty was one of them. Or the sergeant then. Anyway, he went back. Supposed to go out to this place. Came back. And he didn't. He went so far and laid down and then came back. I know that. Anyway, he came back. And so they called for me and made the thing up to go back to the great quarters and show me this area of photographs. And show me these houses. They said, well, I want you to go and go out there and make some noise. Like a nuisance patrol, you could call it. And if you can get a prisoner, take the prisoner, you see.
Was this daylight or night?
No, about 3 o'clock in the morning, I think. So it was dark, it was dark, but there was a moon or anything. So we set off, this patrol took, I think, it took about 4 men, that's all. And Tom Chomington, one of the other ones, another Chomington. And then I went out and passed the pile of rubble after we'd gone back to the yards. And then we could see where it was, there was still burning, flickering the flame in this house. So we carried on and we finished up going to a field that was soggy, wet, that was just as though there'd been some vehicle doing about it. Anyway, you couldn't see it, you could just feel it. And then we got Mullis up to the house, and there was a bit of a track, and then there was the firehouse. And so the one of the lads who was deaf, I mean, he should have been, he got the MM actually later on in Greece, and he was deaf, and he was a lad, a chap, he was older than me, and he used to play hell with you if you didn't pick him to go on patrol. Now, than anybody else, and they get out to get out of going on a patrol, he used to say, what's the matter with me? Why, you know. Because I used to tend to pick the same ones each time, that lads that I knew to rely on, I suppose, that they wouldn't let you down, but it was just a habit, really. Why, they didn't grumble, but anyway, they didn't. But every day, he said, what's it with me? I said, all right, you come with us then. So we went out, we got to this track, and I said, right. I said, cover me while I'm going to go forward and see if I can hear anything or see anything. So we're just going to set off like this. And this man, what did you say? About to stop. I went back to him. I told him again, but just then I thought, I'm going to set off again. Door opened, and this German came out with his coat down to his ankle, sort of thing, rifle smoking, just finishing his cig off like. So we just sort of stood to stop that. And then he waited for his mate. His mate came out, and then was coming towards him. So we opened fire on him. So we opened fire, and then we went. We opened fire, then went. I said, right. So that was made us. I think we threw a grenade or something like that, and we were supposed to mechanise, and we did do. So we set off back. They must have been going out to relieve, obviously to relieve another couple. You see, the army that were there, army that were sort of in trenches or like that. But anyway, they were going to relieve from them, and they must have had a machine gun and a mortar, because as soon as we'd opened fire, then they opened up with this machine gun and this mortar, although they didn't just know where we were. So I said, right, come on, so we set off. And got back to our positions, into this house. And I reported back to Major Stringer. And this was where he said, didn't believe me really, that I'd been out there. What can you say? You can't call me away. Right. And as I got back to our place, I was in, these two Germans had followed us, wanting to surrender really. And they couldn't catch us. We must have been going that fast. And so they came in then, so then I took them, I said, right, come in. So then I took them back, made you sick, and they beat two prisoners. And in the book there it says we took two prisoners, but the two prisoners followed us back in off the toll, and they couldn't catch us, but we took them in that then, and handed them over to Major Singh. So he couldn't say, he probably had them, I think there were a lad there who could speak a bit of German, they probably interrogated them, but they'd probably tell him then that we'd been out there and opened fire, that sort of thing. But he didn't believe us. Us dead.
Were the Germans tending to give themselves up easily at this stage?
Well, those two certainly did. Now, the thing is, some of them weren't even Germans, they were French. Some were French, some were Ukrainian stuff, or something like that. They weren't all. If they were Germans, they used to tell you to stand up and say, "Ich bin Deutsche," you know. Whereas some of the others, they did text them and they were French. And others were Ukrainian, you know. So they got to the stage where they weren't all Germans that you were facing, really. But anyway, so I carry on. That was it, they took me to prisons. And I went back to my house. And my platoon commander, Lieutenant Bradford, then it was. He just joined his actually. I don't know whether he'd come from a cap, but he got a military medal. But I don't think he'd been in the infantry the whole time. Anyway, I think it was a bit. If you hear a machine gun set go off fire for theirs, and he thought, you know, when you were used to it, you took no notice of it because you realised how far away it was, or, you know, nowhere near it. And he thought it was somebody putting an attack in, you know, at first. I mean, he was okay, I think he wasn't an infantryman, he must have come from an attack unit. But he was all right afterwards, and it was just when he first joined us.
Was he just a young fellow?
He was only young, yeah. And you're like that yourself first, and then you eventually realise how far away a machine gun was, or mortifier, or it's miles away, you know, it's somebody else getting it next door to you. Even when he fired it, it's sometimes way over your head, but you know. Anyway, I went back to the house, and that was it for the night. Then the following day, we were told we had to put an attack in onto these farmhouses. And we're going to be supported by tanks. So this was during the day, this was during daylight. So we, not what time it was, part of the day, but it was daylight anyway. So we set off, and I'd been out that the previous night, so I had an idea, you know. We got almost as far as this pile of rubble. It had been an outbuilding of some sort, a farm building that had been hit, and it was just a pile of rubble. And there was a long ditch running right away from our house, running right away past this rubble. It was like a drainage ditch. Anyway, we walked and we got amongst this rubble, then we were open fire on us then. So we got the tank at the side of us here. We got down and had a smoke. You know, you couldn't do anything else, so we had a smoke, and were snipers firing from these houses. And with two brothers in our company, not doing Mark at all, not at that time. And two brothers, and they were both in the same sections together. And it was over amongst this rubbish position, and the younger one lifted his head up, to the head. Of course, his brother was there at the side of it. And this tank was nearest to us. I was told the ground was that soft, he had got bogged down, couldn't move. And they're trying to get out of the tank, and every time they tried to get out, the sniper and the commander kept bobbing up, and they'd sniper the fire, they bobbed back down. And two or three times that happened, and eventually they got out, and the driver got out. And we were then told to get back to while we were there, we we called for air support. And cab rank, which were used to supposed to circle around, and you call them in, and came down. Well, so they called these planes in. I think they were Typhoon, I think. And call them down to attack these. We've been down in this rubble to attack these houses. So anyway, they came. But instead of attacking these houses, they attacked us. I think they killed one of our lads, Walters, apparently. And then they came round again, attacking us. So they said, right, get back best way you can to the position that we'd left. The only way back was along this ditch, which was half full of water. And it was firing, he knew we were going on this ditch, so it was firing, it was clipping the top of the ditch all the time you were on it. When I got in, the driver from the tank, must have been the driver or the gunner or something, he was in front of me in this ditch. And he was stretched out full length, you see, you couldn't sort of get up. And he was stretched full length because we were firing it across the top. And he was going on, and of course they used to wear like a boiler suit, didn't they, did these tank suits, like a tank suit. And he was going on, and it was gradually filling with water, you see, and it was... I said, go on, he said, can't move, he said, pull it like a Michelin man, you know, full water. So I pulled it, he had his gaiter, and I said, look, I was stepped out full length, and he was stepped out full length. And I pulled his trousers out of his gaiter. I said, right, unzip it and crawl out of it, you see. So I held his trouser bottom, and he crawled out of his tank suit, just had his underpants on underneath and a revolver. And that was it. That's how we finished up at the other end of the ditch. I followed him out like. And we came out, and I think we got relieved then. Somebody relieved us.
Do you remember the name of the two brothers you mentioned earlier?
I don't. That lad at Dillon knows him, but I can't remember the names. But he, when we came back, he was sort of so shocked with his brother, the elder brother. And we managed to get him back through this ditch. But they took him away on the side again after that. Probably, I don't know, whether he broke down or whether the shock of it, I don't know. I mean, it was enough to kill you, see your brother shot at the side of you. That's what we saw then. And then we were relieved then, and we were in these houses, dried his clothes off. And I remember one of the lads came out and just had his overcoat on, and his long johns on, and his boots, which are parade for something. And RSM, companies had an idea. Put you on a charger and properly dressed them. They were kidding him, really. You know. You've got your hat on. Got it all here. He was just his long johns and his old top coat. That was... That must have been... October-ish. Back end of October, I think.
Did you go back in to attack these farmhouses again?
No, we didn't, because we were somebody relieved us, and they then did this. I don't know if we relieved us, whether it was the KY, I think it was the 2nd Fourth Palace. They relieved us, and then I think they did it. I think it was near the Casino Canal in Canal, round that way, I think that was. No, was it? Oh, no, I don't know. That might have been later. Yeah. But they relieved us, they must have finished up with the tank, which will leave one of the tanks, and I suppose they recovered it then. I don't know, but the tank didn't do as much good. Yeah.
There was a canal there which you were involved with getting across. Do you recall that, after this particular adventure you've been describing?
No, that was later, I think. That was the next thing we were at after that.
After the rest.
That was called Sleep, that position was called Sleep, where we got attacked and we had to come back. And then, next time we were there, you see there's gaps and you can't remember what happened in between. And then we were in these other positions and we were in front of Faenza. And I think there was a canal there, I think that was the Casino Canal and the river, Lamorne River. And we were in these farmhouses, and then again, the patrol again called us to take a patrol out. Officer was going with me, Lieutenant Gray. He was he was burning well, fairly beach patrol, and we had to try and find a crossing, the way to cross this river, Lamoni, I think I found it. So we set off from this farmhouse about 3 o'clock, 22nd of November, it was 3 o'clock in the afternoon. We went down the road and over to cross a deep dike, which was up to your chest in water. Cross this dike and then follow the path at the other side of the dike. And it went along like a gully and a steep embankment. We were sort of walking with a steep embankment up to the right. And then the ground dropped away into a sort of a valley. And German had cleared everything, so we got a field of view and field of fire in front. They cut all the trees down and chucked them into the bushes and chucked them in this bit of a ditch. We were walking on, and I was leading man. Not being leading man only because I was supposed to be leading. I didn't want to do what I had to do because I was leading the patrol. I would go along this gully and it sort of bore out to the right. Went round to the right, and as it went round to the right, there was a dugout dug out into this embankment. And at the entrance of the dugout was a German sat on a chair, bored to death, sort of thing. We both saw each other at the same time, I was back in the interview. And we both sort of, for a second, flabbergasted, and he jumped up and run inside and in. And I thought, I'm not coming running after you, you've probably gone in there and picked your rifle up. Waiting for him, so I shouted him to come out. Anyway, he wouldn't. I could hear him inside, he was frightened to bloody death. I'm not saying that. I could hear him, he was sort of whimpering, if you know what I mean. Probably expecting me to throw a grenade in. And I was shouting him to come out, said I wouldn't shoot, and he'd shoot him. Anyway, just banking at the top of the banking, they also had a look in the slip trench. So I was shouted him to come out, and he popped over with his smizer and hit me. I immediately fired back at him. His head was just took over the top. And then I jumped and I leapt into all this in brushwood. That was my first reaction, just to get it, in case he would fire again. Anyway, I never fired again. I don't know whether I hit him or not. Nobody went up to see. Anyway, I was being hit like, and I said to him, give us a pull up, probably. I've been hit, so give us a pull up out of this ditch, I can. So the officer then said, oh, you better get back, you see, so a couple of lads walked back up this truck. I don't know what happened to this looking dugout, but they got him out of that. Anyway, it went back and others followed us back. They don't know what happened. My memory's a bit bad at that. So, to go back, through this here big dike, out at the other side, and stuff. Have a look. So, just see, my balls is all right. And I do beat it up here.
In the top of your thigh?
I beat it. The back of my leg there, it come out. There.
Oh, right, yes. Right, the top of your leg.
I raised the scrotum into the right leg, and then it must have hit the bone and finished up down there. And anyway, they got outside the road and they ripped my pants and said, oh, you're all right. So then a stretcher come down, because we're fairly near to the farmhouse, etc. So two lads come running down with the stretcher. I climbed on it and they carried me back to the farmhouse. And then waited there for, oh, then Major Singh had come. I was laid there. Have you got your watch? Give us your watch. Because I had an issue with watches, so they wanted that back. And waited there, and then they came with a jeep with stretchers on, and they put us on there and back to the casualty clearing station.